Good morning, gentlemen. It's nice to be meeting once again. I mentioned last week I was a little bit under the weather, unfortunately, and the virus is still sticking with me, so I hope you'll bear with me if I have to cough or clear my throat. Example given. We left off last week. We were dealing with living in Tzuvos, on Daf Beis Amud Beis. And we left off last week with the Gemara attempting to find a source for Rava's Halacha. Rava's Halacha was as follows. That when a person makes some kind of a condition in a get, in a divorce contract, and he does not return, he doesn't fulfill the condition, I should say, but he doesn't fulfill the condition as a result of something beyond his control, so do we consider that condition to be fulfilled or not? Rava claims that we don't give any credence to the event that was beyond his control, the onus, and rather we say that he's not able to, that get, that contract is going to be valid. Let's state it in slightly less abstract terms. Let us say, for example, a person is going to war. A man is going out to war, and he's concerned that if he does not come back, that his wife will not be sure if he's alive or not, and even if he does die, she may be subject to the laws of Yibam, and these are both outcomes which he wants to avoid. So he gives her a get with the following stipulation. Here is your get. It should be valid in 30 days from now if I have not returned. If, however, I have returned, then the get is no longer valid. I guess he has reason to think it's going to be a short war. Perhaps a more realistic case would be 12 months, but in any event, that is the divorce contract that she gives his wife. Let us say now that after 25 days, or perhaps after 11 months in the 12-month case, he plans on returning, and he begins his journey home, and he has every reason to believe he'll make it back in time. Perhaps it's not such a long journey, or he's given himself certainly enough time to get there, and on the way he suffers an illness, and it's such a debilitating illness that as badly as he wants to return home, especially in light of the conditions that he knows exist in his get, nevertheless he has no choice but to remain recuperating in some hotel somewhere along his way. The question then is, do we view that as an onus that is beyond his control, and therefore it's really not included in the stipulation, it's not included in the condition that he put in the get? He said, if I don't return from now on until 12 months from now, if I do not return during that time, then it's a good get. His intention was, well, obviously, if I don't return when I had the ability to return, and yet I didn't make it back. Except that's also not really true, because really, he had intended to return unless it was out of his control anyway, for a different reason. So then perhaps you could say, well, yes, but he only had in mind for those things which were in his control, out of his control, such as, you know, becoming a POW or you know, getting killed in battle. But not because on his way back he suffered an illness, something random of that sort. So do we say that that's considered an onus which is beyond his control, and therefore that does not make the get valid? In other words, the condition upon which the get was resting was not fulfilled. Excuse me. Or do we say, in fact, that the condition was fulfilled, and he, in fact, did not return, and so the get is valid? So Rava's halacha is that we do not give any sort of credence to such a case, to such an onus that happens before, which prevents him from returning. And rather, we look at it and say, since the condition was in fact fulfilled, and he said, if I don't return, it's a get, and he did not return. So then, it's a good get. So the Gemara searched for a source for this halacha, and they went through various brisos to see if any of those cases, which are similar to the cases that we just discussed, bear out Rava's halacha. And in every case, the Gemara was able to deflect the proof by saying that the Mishnah was really talking about a slightly different case, or that perhaps the case that the Mishnah was discussing is a case which was super low shkiach, or that he had it in mind because he specifically, even though it wasn't the case that he had in mind, in other words, let's say our case, he goes to battle, and he has in mind that if he dies in battle, it should be a good get. But if he gets sick along the way back, that's really not what he had in mind. Now let us say that on his return, he gets killed by a lion. A freak accident, a lion attacks. He's traveling through some jungle and he got killed. So, in that instance, that's certainly not the case that he had in mind. On the other hand, he is dead, and he wants his wife to be divorced in the instance in which he was going to end up dead. So, do we view it as, it is an onus on the one hand, it's an event that was beyond his control, it's not what he was thinking about when he made the contract. On the other hand, it was an event that was beyond his control, so perhaps we should say that that onus would be different. Right? Perhaps even if you said that ordinarily onus begins to make a difference, maybe that's the case where it was so outside of what he was thinking of that in fact would be a good get. Or I should say would invalidate the get because the condition would not be good because it was in fact a good onus. And perhaps that Mishnah is not really a proof to Rava. And we went the other way as well. We discussed a case where a person came back and just before he arrived back, he missed the last ferry of the day, and it was the last day before the condition was fulfilled. So he's on the other bank of the river trying to get our attention, talking to Adam, whatever he can do to tell people, look, I came, I missed the last ferry, but I was here the day before. So in that instance, we say that's a super shchiach onus, a super common onus, that in that case we expect you to have gotten around this, or to have stipulated it if you were concerned that would happen. But you should have known that would happen, and therefore we hold you responsible for such an onus. So we sort of discussed it in both ways, and based on the Tosfos that we saw on the bottom of Beis Hamikdash and Tosfos on the bottom of Gimel Amud Aleph, which we will hopefully take a look at in a little bit, bears this out, says that there's really three categories of onsen. There's the category of onsen which is super common, there's the category of onsen which is super uncommon, and then there's the middle category, which is actually the category that we are saying Rava is discussing, which is sort of in the middle. I guess the way the Tosfos refers to it is shkiach v'lo shkiach. It's common and it's uncommon. Some kind of in the middle level of onus, which is not quite as far beyond his control as, let's say, an RE attacking him, and not quite as uncommon, but not quite the same as getting stuck and missing the last carry of the day. So, in any event, the Gemara concludes that we are not able to find any kind of source, any Mishnah or Braisa, which supports Rava's halacha. Since that is the case, the Gemara then goes on to say that Rava really had his own reason, which had nothing to do with the source of Braisa or Mishnah that he had seen, but rather was based on his own logic, a reason that he felt the halacha has to be ein onus begidden, that an onus does not serve to hold up a condition in a gap. So let's take a look at exactly what Rava says. Three lines from the bottom of Beis Hamikdash, the Gemara says, Ella, rather, Rava svar d'nafshei k'amar. Rava was speaking of his own svara, based on his own logic that he had come up with himself. Mishum tznuos, because of women who are more modest, and Mishum puchos, because of women who are immodest. sort of on both sides of the spectrum, the modesty spectrum. We shouldn't snuos. Because it's snuos, he was concerned. To e amit, lo lahave get, because if you would say that it should not be a get as a result of onus, that anytime there's an onus that occurs, that prevents the stipulation from activating the get. So then what will happen? Then there will be times the low onus, that he won't actually have suffered an onus. Rather, let's say, like in our case, he in fact died in battle, and he didn't return as a result of that. So therefore, the get should really be good. The sovereign still thinks the onus. She'll think to herself, how do I know? How do I know if that's what happened? Maybe he got killed by a lion on the way back. Maybe he got sick on the way back and he's going to return in 2 weeks. I have no way of knowing. Umiagna, and she will therefore become literally chained, or she'll become an aguna. She'll be unable to remarry, and she obviously isn't married to her current husband. He's not here. And the other one, she'll sit, meaning she'll be stuck in that situation and will be unable to do anything. The reason we refer to people like this as snuos is because she's very sort of careful, she's very hesitant to get remarried in a situation where she may herself be a married woman. And presumably this is a result of her modesty, I guess, or caring about not wanting to marry another man when she's not sure that her marriage to the first man is really over. Seems like a valid concern. And the Gemara then says, Mishum Prutzos, and because of Prutzos, people who are, women who are immodest, the Iyamit Lola have a Gita, that if you would say that an onus prevents a get from occurring, Zimin, there will be times, the onus, that there was in fact a valid onus, right, that he did in fact get sick on the way home, and he's going to be back in you know, I don't know, 2 months after the time of the validation of the guest. The Azla, and she'll go, Minsavan, get married. The Minsa get bottle, and when he returns, it'll turn out that the get, or when we find out that it was an onus of some sort, it'll turn out that the get was really invalid. Ubonaha Mamzerim. And her children are now Mamzerim because she was a married woman when she had those children from the second marriage. So this is a case where Rava says that ain't onus to get them because of a case that may result erroneously, but a case that may result in some sort of a situation which the Rabbanim would like to avoid. On the one hand you have the Tzniwa who's going to become an Aguna, and on the other hand you have a Prisa who's going to get married and is going to have Mamzerim in a case where she really shouldn't have gotten remarried at all. So on both sides of the spectrum, there's reason to be concerned. How does saying ain't onus to get solve this concern? Because as far as the snuos are concerned, we know she knows that the halacha is ain't onus to get. So as long as the tenai was fulfilled, she's able to get remarried. As far as prudas are concerned, since the halacha is ain't onus to get, she'll do what she was going to do anyway, which is to get remarried. But now it'll be a valid legal action. She will, in fact, be a divorcee and not a married woman when she gets remarried to the second man. I think it seems pretty clear that the mashmalus of the Gemara is, that the implication of the Gemara is, that really, on a Dalaisa level, the halacha would be yesh onus begin. Really, the halacha should be that there is, in fact, onus begin. And from the Torah's perspective, if a person made a tenai in a get, in such a contract, and then did not fulfill that tenai as a result of something beyond his control, that would not be considered a fulfillment of that condition. Nevertheless, the Rabbanim came along and said that even though the Torah says that halakha, still we're going to sort of make our own takana and change that halakha and say, no, really, ain't onus begin. Onus does not prevent the conditions from being a fulfillment of that contract. In this case, we're talking about a guest specifically. And that's the case that Rabbanim made this takana in. You know that Rabbanim have the ability to make certain takanas. The Gemara is, in a minute, going to challenge the ability of Rabbanim to make this particular takana. In the meantime, let us just look at Rashi. Rashi says, Zimnin delo onus, the top of Kimon with Aleph. Sometimes it was not known as a Havigida, and it really is a good guess. The Tzavra, we're talking about now, about Snuos case. the suffering, the sure thing, just you know, we're being so modest. Perhaps in the seventh day, no guest. The two that lean off, and so be too worried to get remarried. And conversely, Rashi explains that in the Pritzah's case, she would get married. And when he comes in the Yom Anasti, he'll come and say, hey, I had an onus, I was unable to return it as a result of something that was beyond my control. Nimsa, it will come out, get bottle, uboneha min ha'achon mamzerim. The get is no longer valid, and the children she has in the second man are mamzerim. Rafikach amri yehe get. Therefore, they said it should be a good get. So, Rava, as a result of this sakana that he felt that Rabbanan enacted, says that must be that this is the halacha. I don't believe that the Gemara is saying that Rava enacted the sakana. I think the shot rather is that Rava was saying that this halacha is true based on a svar which he felt that Rabbanan would have used to enact such a sakana in years previous. And that's why the Gemara really, in hindsight, was still theoretically justified in bringing Raya's from those Mishnayot, because those Mishnayot potentially would have been after the Rabbanon were enacting the Takana. And Rabbah was simply explaining what how it was, why was the Rabbanon enacting such a halacha. Excuse me. Now, Tosfos on the top of Gilam et al. Gets involved in a very sticky issue, which is as follows. We just said that there's reason to be concerned that the Rabbanan would have made a takana for both ends of the spectrum, of the modesty spectrum, we call it. Because it's the most women who are going to be concerned that an onus did not happen and be afraid to get remarried. Excuse me, women who are going to be afraid that an onus did happen and therefore you get it no good. And Prutzos, who will be concerned that an onus did not happen, not concerned, but who will assume an onus did not happen, whether they could get married, even though really an onus did happen, and they really are not able to get remarried. And the lesson of Tznuos and Prutzos is sort of implies that Tznuos are sort of the, what we might call the super frum among us. Or maybe a better way to say it would be the super concerned about halacha. And the Prutzos are the people who would be pull it together to break through a wall, pushing the envelope, so to speak. And that sort of woman is the Prutzah. So, what about the average, law-abiding Jewish female citizen? How is she to react to this situation? What's, in fact, the correct reaction? Her husband gave her a guess saying, if I don't return in 12 months, it's a good guess. She has no idea what the reason is for her husband's return. We're now working with the idea, this is pre-Rava, pre-the Takana of Ein Onus Begidden. So at this point, the halacha is Yesh Onus Begidden. And she wants to know, she goes to ask Yishayahu, hey, what should I do? Should I get remarried or should I not? Should I wait? If you tell her to get remarried, then you're sort of putting her in the Sukkot camp. If you tell her not to get remarried and to sit and wait and make her an Aguna, then you're putting her in the Tznuos camp. Well, one way or the other, something's got to be right. One of the two has to be the right thing. If we're concerned for both eventualities in a case of Yesh Onus Begidden, well, I don't understand which one is correct. It's not like the Rabbanan came along and then made something up. Hey, what about these two obscure cases where they're not going to know what to do and they're going to potentially do the wrong thing? They're not obscure cases. You just categorize all the potential cases that could possibly occur in a case of onus begitzen into two camps. And you said both of the eventualities are potentially bad. Now, granted, you could theoretically have a person who gets remarried and it turns out there was no onus. And you could theoretically have a person who waits and there was an onus. And obviously in those two cases, then you're absolutely right. That would not be a problem. However, I guess you could sort of view it as if there's sort of two questions you have to ask. Question one is, in terms of sort of identifying the four different cases that the Rava is dealing with, question one is, was there in fact an onus? And then question two is, what did the woman do? Did she get remarried or not? But in any event, it does seem a little bit strange that you're sort of not really being concerned about two obscure cases, but rather about almost every case. Because certainly from our perspective, we're never going to know if there's an onus until the person returns, or until we find definitive knowledge that he didn't return as a result not of an onus, but of something within his original condition. So Tosfos on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph deals with this question. And he tries to understand how it is there's sort of no middle group. There's sort of either Tumas or Purtas of everybody. So he explains as follows. He says, "Dear Uncle, the Tzavar Danis," he's referring now to the case of the Tznua, a woman who there's going to be a time when there was no onus that occurred, and really she has a right to get remarried, and she's going to think, oh no, maybe an onus occurred. And of course she doesn't know, right, which is sort of our original question. Let's see how Tosfos understands this. Tosfos says, Umin Hadin. And really, Umin Hadin, from the sort of Dalet Amos of Halacha perspective, the strict letter of the law understanding, nothing to do with any pushing any envelopes, and nothing to do with any chumas. Tosfos says, Let's Lama Mechash. We really have no reason to be concerned. Dilma Anasu, that the concern would be that maybe there was an onus, and that's why he didn't return yet, and really the get is invalid. Why? The Ruban Lo Anisi. Because the majority of people, when they don't return, it's not because of an onus. It's because of the fulfillment of their condition in the get. And therefore, we're referring to these people as tznuos. Shemachmir malatman, that they're being more machmir on themselves. Even though they're able to get married, they're still holding back and not getting married because of a concern that maybe it was an onus, some sort of a far-flung, far-fetched concern that maybe this is what happened. Okay, so now we understand one side of it. In other words, Tosfos is telling us that if a woman would go to her rav, in this case, husband didn't return, she's not sure if it's an onus or not, what should I do? The rav would tell her, most people, it's not an onus, therefore you have a right to rely on that rav, and you can get remarried. So if that's the case, so then now Tosfos has to deal with the following question. How can you tell me that prutos are considered prutos? Is this to say they're doing something wrong, they're pushing the envelope, they're morally degrading our society, they're not doing anything wrong, they're following the halakha that the rabbi would have told them. So Tosfos explains as follows. We got a prutos, and by prutos, logar seen in the suffer the low honest. We don't include the words in our Gemara, the Savra Dolo Anas, that she thinks there was no onus. Ella of the Amra Dolo Anas, and she says that there was no onus. Not the Savra and she thought, but rather the Amra and she says. What is the significance of this change in text that Tosfos is telling us? This is in fact the text that we have printed in our Gemara. The Tosfos is calling to our attention why, Pirush. The explanation of this Gemara is, Afiru kishiyata hakol da'onis. Even when a rumor went out, the news was spreading that there was an onus, it wasn't anything confirmed. You know, it's like when we hear on the news unconfirmed reports. So, she has heard some reason, something that maybe to the effect that he had some kind of an onus happen, and that's why he didn't return. You know, she heard a report that your husband is safe back from the war and just he got held up in France with an illness, but he's coming back. So she has reason to believe he's returning. And even in such a case, Amra shall say to low on us, there was no illness. Sort of she's in denial. Or if you could say that he asked for the illness, or she herself may know definitively when an onus happened, the Acher of Lo Yadu, and other people do not know, I mean, she has some way of knowing, it's not surprising that she herself might have gotten news without anybody else receiving any. And therefore, she's sort of able to tell people that he didn't have an onus. So essentially, what Tosfos did is divide all the cases into, I guess, three camps. You have the middle camp of people who, in a situation where they have no idea what happens, will ask their rabbi whether they can get remarried or not, and the rabbi will tell them, yes, you may, because most people do not have their own sin, and you have a right to rely on the robe that says that most tanayim of onus, an onus didn't happen, and therefore most of the time the tanayim you get would have been fulfilled. As far as the tznuos are concerned, even though the rabbi would potentially tell them that according to the strict letter of the law you have the right to get remarried, they're concerned about a situation where they might get remarried and the husband will return, even though most of the time there's no onus. But maybe an onus did occur in this case, and I'm concerned to get remarried because what if I get remarried and then he turns up? And it turns out that the get was no good because of the fact that there was an onus, and that's why he wasn't able to return. So she's concerned. So that's why she doesn't get remarried. So that's a tznua. And a prutza is somebody who gets remarried in a situation where she has strong reason to believe that there was an onus. And in that case, if she asked the rabbi what would happen, and she actually laid all the facts on the table, what she would ask the rabbi what she should do, and she lays all the facts on the table and says, "Hey Rabbi, I have reason to believe my husband is ill in France, but it's an unconfirmed report, and nobody can confirm it for me, and I want to know if I'm actually a divorced lady and if I can get remarried or not," the rabbi would tell her, "Wait, don't get remarried yet. Because even though ordinarily we would tell you that most people do not suffer onsen on their way back, and presumably the condition of your get has been fulfilled, since in this case you have reason to suspect that there was some kind of an onus, do not get remarried, and wait. And wait to see if you can get some confirmation of that report. And perhaps over enough time, the rabbi will tell you, you could get remarried because now the report was never confirmed and it's been so long, so then obviously the report you got originally was false. Perhaps that is what the rabbi would say, or something of that sort. But in any event, when she gets remarried initially, it's because she didn't ask a shayla, and rather she's sort of in denial if there's any rumor of his return at all. And really, he's not coming back. Excuse me. And therefore, those are now divided it up into sort of three camps. And the two of Nefutas are, in fact, sort of the spectral ends. And most people, in most cases, would, in fact, be able to get remarried and there would be no problem. There's no gzera for those cases. It's only for those outer cases. And of the terms tznuos and prutzos make a lot more sense in our Gemara. Let us return to the Gemara now. The Tosafot does go on to ask questions and answer, but I don't think it's within our time frame or, you know, too relevant to our Gemara. We dealt with the particular question of how it was that we have determined tznuos and prutzos and how it is that those are special cases, but let us return now to our Gemara. The Gemara asks the following question. We were saying earlier that really from this is not a divine decree that ain't on us to get in, but it is a rabbinic enactment that we say ain't on us to get in to protect from these cases of tznuos and prutzos. So the Gemara asks the following question. Is there a case where midaraisa is not a get? Right? Because, again, let's say in a prutzos case, she wants to get remarried, and really he had an onus, and therefore it shouldn't be a good get, and we're convinced she's going to go get remarried. So therefore we say, ain't onus to get, and it is a good get, and you could go get remarried. So do I ask as follows? But on the deraisa level, before the rabbanim came along and enacted any takana, it was not a good get. And now, because of the rabbanim are coming along and making them some kind of enactment, it is a good get. So on a deraisa level, she's an ancient fish. She's a married woman, according to the Torah. But the rabbanim are coming along and sort of superimposing their ruling to say that she's not a married woman. You want to ask yourself, is there anything to midiraisa lola how they get them on the Torah level? From the Torah's perspective, it's not a get. Mishum tznuos, mishum prutzos, shavin eishes fish ba'alma. And because of these concerns of tznuos and prutzos, you're now going to say that an eishes ish can now go get married to anybody else? In other words, any case where there was in fact an onus, but he didn't return, and we hold in on the begin. Now you're going to say a woman who, on a deraisa level, on a Torah level, is really an eishes ish. From the Torah's perspective, she really is an eishes ish. But because of the rabbanon, it's not an eishes ish, and she's allowed to get remarried to somebody. So essentially, a deraisa eishes ish is now getting married. So how can the rabbanon permit that? So my answer is in yes, that is possible. Why? Called the Mekadesh, Adar to the Rabbanon Mekadesh. Anybody who gets married according to the Rabbanon's understanding of what should happen. And the Rabbanon uprooted his Kedushin from him. Let us take a look at Rashi, because Rashi clarifies a little bit how this works. Rashi says, Kol HaMekadesh, that's the first narrow line, Kol HaMekadesh Isha Al-Dat Shem Higu Chachmi Yisrael B'Yisrael HuMekadesho. Anybody who marries a woman, it's according to the understanding that the Chachmi Yisrael had created, and it says Sheyu Kayamin Kedushin Lefi Dibur Chachamim, and that the Kedushin, the marriage, should stand according to the words of Chachamim. Sheyu Betel Lefi Dibur Chachamim, I Degin Sheyachshir Chachamim, based on Gittin, which the Chachamim will master. In other words, you know that a person says when he gets married, the statement for a man to make is, Hare Avi Kadesh Asli, B'Tabazdu, Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael. That line of Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael is partially including the fact that any time the Rabbanan wants to sort of retroactively uproot the condition that you once did, they have the legal authority to do that. So that's essentially what's happening in this case. Really, ordinarily, when it's all working on a Torah level, what happens is your Kedushin stands, and then if you give a get, so now the get comes along and sort of cuts off the marriage at that point. So there is sort of, historically, a marriage in existence. It goes from the years of the beginning of the marriage to the, whenever the date of the get was. excuse me. However, there's no marriage after that, and that's how a get works. However, when you have a Rabbanan type of takana, which comes along and says, a woman who on a Torah level is an Eishes Ish, we're not going to say can get remarried, the Rabbanan can't use that regular mechanism, because in fact, like our question was positing, that woman is still an Eishes Ish on a Torah level, so you can't have a Doraisa Eishes Ish, now go get remarried. The Gemara explains that what's occurring in that instance is, the mechanism that's being used is that the Kedushin that originally occurred, perhaps even 10 years back or 20 years back, is now being uprooted retroactively. And the way we view it is, in fact, that for the last 20 years she hasn't even been a married woman. In other words, obviously we know that she has, but we view it as if for the last 20 years she has not been a married woman, because the Rabbanan have the ability to retroactively uproot the condition as if they never even happened in the first place. So the Gemara challenges this from a perspective of some of the cases make sense, but some of them do not. Amar Rav Yehuda Rav Ashi. Yehuda says to Rav Ashi, Tenach Kodesh B'Kaspa. It makes sense in a case where the condition, the original condition that was done with money. But we know there's more than one way for a man to be a Kaddish woman to legally affect a Kedushin. One of them is to give him some money. However, Kaddish would be a Ma'ikal Memor. We know that one of the ways he can affect a Kedushin is to have relations with a woman. And that in itself creates the marriage. As we say, it consummates the marriage. And it makes the marriage effective. So, in such a case, Ma'ikal Neymar, if that was the method he was using to do Kedushin, it's not that he did Kedushin and then consummated a marriage afterwards, but the actual act of having relations with the woman, the actual Ma'isabiyah, is what created any marriage at all. So, what are you going to say? In other words, the whole idea when the Rabban makes the Kedushin retroactively non-existent, is that whatever method he was using to create Kedushin, so we now say it no longer had that legal effect of creating marriage, and it was doing nothing, perhaps. But that's okay if you're talking about money. So then, it turns out he gave her a gift 20 years ago, but it was a gift that had no marital or legal effects. However, if he had relations with her, what are you going to say? He did that and that it has no lasting effect? And Rashi clarifies, Kaddish Bedia Mai. And this is one of those Rashi's where you kind of have to read the Rashi together with the Dibur Maaseh. Kaddish Bedia Mai Afka Asa Me'ikara Ika. What retroactive uprooting is there? He explains, Bishlama Ayidei Get Kasher. It's good when you have a Get Kasher. This is the point we just spelled out. Afafi Shakadushin Kayamim. Even though the Kedushin sort of stand, they're still in existence. Ad Akshav, until now, Gderet HaKasavu, he, it is a law, a decree of the Torah, Shaget Kasher, the Get cuts it off, Umatri Tuo, and permits, that which was forbidden, the married woman, now she's permitted to marry anybody else. Mikana Laba, from now on further. Meaning, of course, for the last 20 years, she has, in fact, been Asher. And historically, our perspective, when looking back at it, still says that she was a married woman. But from now on, she's not. Avozesh ain't no get min ha-Torah, but in our case, where it's not a good get min ha-Torah, the Akim Ashiro knew the Rabbanim are being master, there's get. Because of the fact that when this person originally affected the marriage, the Chachamim wanted that if the get would turn out to be a case, which is their life not a good get, but the Rabbanim a good get, then retroactively the entire condition was no good. So Tzarakat Alomer, you need to say, Shema Yikar and Loyum condition, the mechanism you need to use is that the original condition was not in fact good. The Ii Kaddish Rabia, and if the person did marriage by having relations by doing the Maitabia, the Ata Oka Kedishin Mafreya, Shemata Hayabi also, what's going to be with the relations that he had with that woman 20 years ago, who it turns out was not going to become his wife? So my answer is, Shaviva Rabbanam Bilas Obilas Moros. Continuing where we left off, the Gemara says that the Rabbanan made his Bia into a Bilas Nus. In other words, essentially a meaningless Bia, a meaningless act of relations. It didn't have any legal effect, and therefore it wasn't like he was together with his wife, but rather with some random woman. And the Gemara says, Shaviva Rabbanam Bilas Nus. Rashi tells us, Lumafreya, retroactively, Ayide Get Shehu Medivrayim, based on divorce contract, which is in fact only good on the Rabbanan level, Medivrayim, from their words, meaning from the Rabbanan's words, Bilas Nus. Therefore, we made this Bila Bilas Nus. Like an adultery type of act of relations. The Yish behind Koach Lassus came. The Rabbanan do in fact have the power to do this. Sharei Hu Talabahan. Because he made his legal action dependent on the Rabbanan when he did it. In other words, he said, Harei at Nikudesh Asli, the Diazu Kedash Moshe of Yisrael. He didn't say Kedavas, he wasn't using a ring or kesef of any sort, but rather he was using this act of Bia. So he said, Harei at Nikudesh Asli, the Diazu Kedash Moshe of Yisrael. When he did that, he was saying Kedash Moshe of Yisrael. When the Rabbanan come along and want to uproot that action as having any legal impact, they have every right to do it because he made himself, made his legal action dependent on what the Chachamim wanted. It's interesting that the Gemara has to go through this whole back and forth. It seems like they were willing and had no problem to, according to Rashi, had no problem to uproot his giving of money and say, oh, it was just a gift. But the Bia, they weren't so quick to do that with, presumably because to turn an act of relations, even retroactively, into a meaningless thing, and to say that it wasn't part of a marriage, but rather just a random act of adultery, even if not between two married people, but between two single people, still, that's not something that Rabbanan are going to do lightly. And even though we're looking back on it, they themselves, when they were doing it, really had in mind that the whole thing should be the beginning of their marriage. And even if 20 years down the line, it turned out they weren't able to maintain their marriage, and very possibly because of a case of just war, not because they got divorced, because that sometimes happens, the marriage didn't work out, but because he went to war and they wanted to protect her from being stuck in a situation where she wouldn't be able to get married and wouldn't be able to be married to her husband who's down here. Nevertheless, the Rabbanan are very, very careful when it comes to something like this. The idea of sort of creating a new action is not even in the past. In Kali Yisrael, it's not something that the Rabbanan are going to do so lightly. Okay. C show ends the first edition of Rava's Halacha and the potential proofs to him, and the and our ending of saying that it was a Rabbanan Takana, which said that because it's Tumas and proofs of Inam Sigin. That's the end of that edition of Rava's statement and its surroundings. The Gemara had another version of what happened, of what Rava said, and of what the conversation in the Beis Medrash was surrounding that statement of Rava's. So let's take a look at that right now. There are those that said what really happened was, Omar Rava, Rava said, the same name you get him. If you recall, this is all based on a halacha that was said in terms of Kedushin. That if a person was supposed to do Kedushin and then got sick, so do we say that he's still responsible to support his wife during that interim period before he's able to do the Kedushin or not? And then based on that, Rava said, but by getting that's not true, by getting an onus would not have any effect and it would still be a good guess. And that was how we started our whole conversation. So now we're saying that really Rava's statement based on the original case of Kedushin was to say the same thing in Gittin. Now really the same thing is true by Gittin, and really an onus, would in fact prevent the get if it was stopping the condition from being fulfilled. Right? In any of those cases that we said, let's say a person goes to war and says it's a good get if I don't return within 12 months. And he doesn't return within 12 months due to something that was beyond his control, Rava's telling us that in fact such an onus does prevent the get. If we see the Rava holds, yesh onus to get him. Again, you have that repetitive blushing that we mentioned on days and days. Why is it repetitive? Perhaps because the Gemara is trying to frame it in terms of the global discussion that exists in Shas, which is yesh onus to get him, yesh onus to get him. Now, sort of, Rava is sort of entering the fray, but because he said the word v'chein and yesh, and we sort of couch Rava's statement in terms of the more global discussion. So now, if that's the statement, so now the Gemara is going to bring the same Mishnahs and Vices that we brought in the first edition, the first Lashon of Rav on Beis and the Beis. However, they're going to bring them for a completely different purpose. Meitzvei, the Gemara asks a question. Harei zegiteich imlo basim mikan v'ashim matachodesh. This is the Mishnah which says as follows. The person says, here is your get if I do not return from now until 12 months. Umeitzvei shnei matachodesh. And then he dies within 12 months. Eino get. It's not a good get. So the Gemara makes the following inference, which is the same inference they made when we brought this mission in the first Lashon. Meitzu de eino get. When he dies, it's where and it's not a good get. Hakala harezai get. However, if he got sick and didn't return as a result of his sickness, it would in fact be a good get. So obviously we see eino nes begitin. So how can Rava, you tell me, yesh onus begitin, we see clearly from here that if he got sick, it would not prevent the stipulation of the get from coming true. So obviously an onus does not prevent the get. So obviously, ain onus begitin. So my answer is, la'olam, ein malacha, really I will tell you, chala nami eino get, that chala is also not a good get. In other words, our whole inference was based on the idea that if it specifically chose the case of mace, it must be that a sort of lesser case of chala, the halacha would not be the same. And the reason the Mishnah shows the case of mace is in order for us to make that inference. The Gemara is responding by saying, no, they didn't choose a mace in order to make, for us to make the inference about chala, about a case where he got sick. Rather, when he got sick, the halacha would be the same, that it's not a good guess, because of the fact that it was an onus and yesh onus begitin. So why did he choose the case of mace then? We assume the reason for the case of mace was for us to infer a different halacha regarding a case of chala where he got sick. But if that's not the reason for the case of mace, why did he choose such a case? Vihi gupa kamashulon, it's coming to teachings about the case of a person dying itself. De'im gel achamizah, there's a concept that a person cannot do a divorce, effective divorce, after he's no longer alive, because we know the affectation of such a get. This is what we discussed when we did it in the first portion. The affectation of the get occurs at the time when he doesn't return. Upon his lack of return, then the get becomes valid at that time. He's no longer alive, and therefore it's sort of coming out that a dead person is supposed to be divorcing. We say that's not able to happen. Dead person cannot affect the divorce, and therefore that's why the get is no good. It's a technical prevention of the gap, but not because of an onus prevented the Tanai from being fulfilled. So the Gemara challenges this. In Galach HaMisa, if you're telling me the Chiddush, that the point that that Mishnah was trying to make is in Galach HaMisa, Hatanali Reisha. We already learned that in the first part of that Mishnah, Dilma Lachu came to Abbasayinu. Maybe it's coming to exclude from the halacha that we know is attributed to the Tana known as, quote, Rabbo Seinu. And now the Gemara quotes it. Toshma is not a quote of the Rabbo Seinu. Rather, we're still referencing the Rabbo Seinu that we brought down earlier. And although earlier in the first question we quoted it, the Gemara does not see a reason to quote it now. And since we have this other opinion, Mr. Abbasainu, who would be a reason for us to reiterate the halacha of Ein Gelach HaMisa, therefore it could be that even though there was a race which already taught us Ein Gelach HaMisa, the Sefer can also be teaching us Ein Gelach HaMisa. One is to teach me the sort of Ikra halacha, the law itself. And another one is teaching you the law is even true in a case where the Rabbo Seinu would argue. We clarified this when we did it in the first lesson, so I don't know if it's worth going into such detail now. The Gemara attempts to bring a different question on Rava, according to this lesson that he holds Yeshon is begin. Tashma, me'ashav, a person says, to get it a gift from now, im lo bas mikan v'ashem asachodesh. That me'ashav is the key difference between this and the case that we discussed earlier, that he wants the application of the gift to happen, the validation of the get, I should say, to happen, the day that he gives it, even though the fulfillment of the Tanai does not occur until much later. In other words, here is the get. And if you get right now, today you are already a divorced woman. However, you can't use this get as a valid get to get remarried if not for the fulfillment of the condition which I stipulated in the get. So, what's that condition? In Robaki, I don't come, you can't be a Shneem like a Kodesh. But then what happens? Umeis of Shneem of HaKodesh, then he dies in those 12 months. How is that get? So we see that it is a good get because he said Me'achshav, right? Even though he died and an onus happened preventing him from returning. And the Gemara spells out, my love is not the same thing, Hu Hadim HaKolo, that if he got sick, he would also be a good get. Because we don't care about any onus that happens. Rather, any time an onus happens, Yeshon is begin, Ein onus begin, and Rav Yeralov Yeshon is begin must be wrong based on this Mishnah. So my response, well, no, maybe Dafka. It's Dafka when it was a death that happened, that he didn't return because he died. Why is that different? Well, Nikolay is people coming of him. Because he does not want her to fall in front of Yibam, but and that's something that he specifically had in mind when he made this Tanai, and we can assume that he had it in mind when he made this Tanai. However, if you asked him at the time of his making the Tanai, what would be if you got sick, he would say, no, of course I don't want to get the people fulfilled in that case. I want to give myself time to return, even if I do get sick. I don't want to make the get indefinite, so that's why I made it only 12 months, but of course if it's just because I'm sick, I want to make sure that I have another couple months to return. So therefore, the Gemara does not have a question relevant from that instance. Tashma, the Gemara brings another attempted question on Rav. May Ahu da Amaluhu ilo asina mitam da shloshim yom lahavigita. If I don't come from now until 30 days, let it be a get. Also, the soul shloshim yomim, he came at the end of 30 days. He passed him off and he missed the last ferry. The ferry had stopped. When he said to them, Shmuel said in that case, he was claiming, look, I'm here, and therefore my lack of crossing the river should not prevent the Tanai from being prevented. Shmuel says in that case, it's not considered coming, and therefore it does prevent the Tanai from being prevented. In other words, the Tanai is fulfilled, and it is a good get, despite the fact that he was on the other side of the river. And the Gemara answers, onta the shchiyah shayni. And onas, which is common, is different. The kivin di ibayi lasiyeh, since he should have made a tanai, which included this possibility of him getting stuck on the other side of the river, v'lo asmi, he didn't stipulate that specific case. Iruhu da'after anashay. He sort of loses out on his own, meaning he's stuck. He, unfortunately, is no longer able to effectuate the get and prevent the tanai from being fulfilled. And therefore, it is a good get in that case. So the Gemara, because of the fact that it's an onus to shchiyah, feels that we don't have a question on lava. Rather, we have sort of an unchallenged halacha. Not even a source for it, but we don't have any questions on it either. And Tosfos passing, let's just take a look at the Tosfos, and with this we'll close. Pasuk Rabbeinu Chananel, Tosfos Igad Amrei, this would be one last one, Igad Amrei Amar Rabbeinu Chananel Min Gittin. So those begin. Pasuk Rabbeinu Chananel Pilash Nakama. Rabbeinu Chananel passing is like the first washing, the Rabbeinu hold in on this begin. The in on this begin. The Hevi Raya, Midika Amar, Stama Hashas, Bereisha Shalach, and Rabbeinu Chananel brings a Raya from the Gemara in Misafas Gittin. Gabi Ahud, the Amar, Ilo Nasivna, Tosin Yom, and the Havigita, Bukhule. That's not getting hung up on this right too much, because I just want to show you one key line. It says, V'im Yishim Onav Enam Asigim. Okay, let's not worry about that for now. But then he says, V'chein Nira, similarly it appears that we should pass like the first Lashon, why? Da'aliva D'igad Amrei, Havu Piruchi Mikol Hani D'maisi Siyatu Lish Nakama. In other words, in the first Lashon, we had a whole bunch of potential proofs to Rava, and in the second Lashon, we had a whole bunch of potential kashas. And it's from the same Mishnah. And so Tosfos is saying, and he says, "We don't want to rely on far-fetched answers." In other words, we had a whole bunch of vices, a whole bunch of mishnayos, various Tanaic sources, which indicated that Rabbah's halacha was true in the first lashon. We were able to deflect those proofs, but on the surface of it, they seemed to indicate that Rabbah was correct. And on the flip side, when Rava said V'chemen you get them that Yesh on the begin, we have a whole bunch of tenacious which on the surface of it seems to indicate the Rava was wrong. So even though we have ways of deflecting those seemingly ironclad proofs, we'd rather sort of live with a bunch of attempted proofs which then were we had some way of deflecting so they weren't absolute, rather than have a bunch of almost questions which weren't absolute. And the result of the Tosfos and Rabbeinu Chananel both passed like in the first Lashon, Tosfos and Tosfos then goes on to discuss the few various levels of onsen, which we mentioned earlier. Just to clarify one point, which we don't attempt to spell out, and I think is anyways beyond the scope of this year, but Tosfos at the bottom of Dilma, at the bottom of Beit Mabez, Diramachal Dilma, made this point that there's a concept of onus to Lo Shchiyah Klal. And the Gemara had already dealt with two different levels of onsen, one being onus to shchiyah and one being onus to lo shchiyah. So that's already brought about three levels of onsen. Tosfos over here sort of asks a new question and then answers by saying there's three levels of onsen. So the Marsha deals with, Tosfos should have already known in Tosfos Doma, on the bottom of the Eighth of the Day, that there were three levels of onsen. Because he himself was creating a third level then. So what is he adding in this Tosfos on Gimel Amud Aleph? And the Marsha discusses this in Tosfos on Beis Amud Beis. A very interesting Marsha. And we'll hold it here for today. And we will begin again next week. Have a good week, everyone.